This is a Wild Games Production podcast.
You remember.
Roll your stealth roll?
Game books, pencils, pizza, cheese puffs, and a hell of a lot of dice.
And the dragon woke up.
Roll for initiative.
This is the Roll for Initiative podcast, where 1E is the place to be.
The Roll for Initiative podcast, this is Volume 8. I'm DM Vince, and I'm sitting alongside Nick.
Hello, everybody.
And we're back for a brand new episode of the Roll for Initiative podcast.
It's all brand new, shiny, and ready to go. What, 20 more percent awesome.
Because we're the Dungeons and Dragons podcast. Nah,
Dungeons and Dragons.
Oh, look
wow.
at that. We got Christopher wow. Walken. Can we get a Homer in there, too?
What's that?
Can we get a Homer in there, too? I mean,
I don't know. You're
rusty on Homer, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm a little rusty on Homer there.
Don't you know that's all great. Anyway, so we're continuing along with our D&D cartoon recaps. Everybody's been loving them. This is not ninth episode, so we're nine into mm-hmm. the series. What's our presto count, by the way?
Presto count is up to 11.
11, all right, cool.
Oh, wait, hold on. I misspoke. 5, 10, 15, 16, 16.
Math is hard.
Sorry. I'm doing hash marks.
Oh, I see what you're doing. Yeah, math is hard. But yeah, so shit. We're up there on them. We'll see what we're doing. Wait till we get to Presto Spells Disaster. So
it should be a lot out of he'll get one out of that, maybe.
Yeah. Wow. Well, what are you going to do? Anyway, we did get an email. Oh, we did want to thank a couple people that did write us some new reviews on iTunes. Thank you for the 5-star reviews. Appreciate that.
Yes, thank you so much for that, everybody.
Keep those coming.
Yep.
So we did get an email, rfistaff@gmail.com, from DM Steve, and he has a question about lightning bolts. And I'll read it for you real quick. In our campaign, we used lightning bolt as a single target spell from a distance. A player used it recently on an enemy while said enemy was engaged in hand-to-hand combat with several party members. I had the party members take half damage and save for a quarter. Fair? Thoughts? Nick?
I would have had them save initially for half.
Yeah.
That's how I would have done it. I wouldn't immediately take half damage, but I don't know. I guess that's fair. As long as you're consistent, I would be cool with that.
I'm trying to think why he automatically decided to just give them the half damage and
half
save
damage.
Quarter.
Right.
I mean, I don't understand why. Maybe DM Steve can follow up with an email and tell us why he decided that.
I would think if he's using it as like a single target, like a magic missile is, right? You know, in this case, he's like, I guess, factoring like a splash damage from the lightning bolt.
So, oh, okay. Yeah, I can see that since he was engaged in hand to hand and went zap.
Yeah, but only thing I could think of is, you know, I guess there's two ways you could play. You can either play it like he did, you know, save for half or, you know, half damage or save for a quarter. Or you roll for a save, and if you make the save, you take half damage and be done with it. So
yes.
That's how I would do it.
I would just do it as normal because, I mean, I don't think there's really... It doesn't make a difference. I mean, even if you could use it to just zap somebody, I don't see why it made a difference. But, I mean, to each their own, and however you want to rule it. But I still want to hear why he thought his half damage didn't save for fourth.
Yeah. It. Only thing I can think of is, like, treating it like there's... It's almost like an area effect sort of thing. Like,
yeah,
that's like I said, splash damage.
All right, cool. All righty, we'll be back right after this. Are you enjoying the show you're listening to right now? Great. Why not head over to patreon.com/WGP and support that show for as little as $1 a month. $1 a month goes a long way to helping support the network of Wild Games Productions. Again, that's patreon.com/WGP. Thank you. Man, we're back.
And we're back.
Let's head right into our Thundercats episode. No, I'm just kidding.
Thundercats?
Snarf. We just turned into the Thundercats recap cartoon podcast. No, I'm kidding.
Oh, God. No.
Hey, be careful. I'll break out Life with Louie, the cartoon.
I'm okay with Thundercats, just not right now.
Life with Louie?
Oh, God, I forgot about that show.
Or I could break out Camp Candy. How about that?
Oh, my God, that was the...
John Candy cartoon?
Oh, my gosh, I totally forgot about that. Wow, yeah. That's crazy.
All right, let's head right into this episode number 9. Go for it, Nick.
Yep, episode number 9. This is actually probably one of my favorite episodes. And this one is called Quest of the Skeleton Warrior. I think a lot of people remember this episode.
Yeah.
When it first came out. What was it? November 12th of 1983. And the summary of this episode is that a cursed knight named Deccion tricks the kids into retrieving a circle of power from Venger. The circle can be used for good or evil, and it's up to Deccion to make that choice. Well, there's a little more to that, though.
Yeah.
But starting the episode, and again, this one starts interesting because it starts with Venger on his nightmare. And you immediately see Deccion, who is a skeleton warrior. Now, everybody grab your Fiend Folios. And I think we see a recurring pattern here, don't we? They feature a lot of monsters from the Fiend Folio in the cartoon.
Because I mean, you've seen
Bullywugs, Shadow Demon, now the Skeleton Warrior.
That's because they were the wackiest creatures for TV. I mean, come on now.
Yeah, well, Skeleton Warriors are really cool. So, you know, everybody, you know, page 79 of your Fiend Folio, if you got it, read up on the Skeleton Warrior. Now, after you read up on it and you watch the episode and you're like, hey, it's not quite how the Skeleton Warrior is in the book. They're close. And this is where they get in. Venger gets in it with Deccion, our Skeleton Warrior. Mm-hmm. He's searching for this thing called the Circle of Power, which still in line with the Fiend Folio, and he needs to find the Circle of Power in the Lost Tower of Celestial Knights. Okay?
Cool name, though.
The Lost Tower of Celestial Knights. And it can only be retrieved by one of pure heart. Therefore, Deccion, being a Skeleton Warrior under the control, I guess, of Venger, he cannot get it himself.
So Uni has to get it, right?
You're close. Venger says, I know of 6 that are pure of heart.
Wow.
And that's obviously our heroes.
Eric is questionable.
And scene. So everybody get the plot?
Eric is very questionable on that one, though.
Yeah. Well, okay. We'll say 5.5. So we go to our brave heroes. We're getting them in a scene where they're on a rope bridge over a windy gorge. And Eric's like blurts out, we're lost, oh fearless leader, at the, you know, the Hank, because he's always busting Hank's chops.
As always.
Uni is freaking out, almost kills everybody because she's like jumping around. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, DM shows up. The winds die out, and he tells them that the way home is this lost tower.
Sure.
But in defeating, but when they get to this lost tower, they must defeat the enemy within themselves. So he gives that whole cryptic thing, and he disappears, and the storm starts again by striking this rope bridge with lightning, because DM is a dick. Yeah. I almost think he did it.
Yeah, I think he did do that. I mean, really? Come on,
I think he did.
Yeah.
Now, one thing I noticed about the animation, I got to say, in this episode, is actually pretty darn good. It's pretty consistent.
Well,
at least from what I've seen.
Some parts.
At least some parts. Some are, well, I'll bring that up in a little bit. But overall, real good animation. Mm-hmm. So Eric is like climbing over everyone that's, on the rope bridge. He gets up there. He's like, what's taking so long? Come on. He gets to the top of the bridge. Also, Presto almost loses his glasses. Uh-huh. And he's like, oh, my goodness. If I lose my glasses, I wouldn't be able to see or do anything to that sort of extent. I'm like, oh, God, foreshadowing. Here we come.
How is Uni hanging onto that bridge? I mean,
love.
Okay, there's that whole climb thing again in a unicorn, but whatever.
Because love is the answer.
Love is what we need. Go on.
Right. It's the power of love.
Oh, Huey Lewis. Go ahead, buddy.
Thank you. So Presto loses his glasses. He makes that comment. So I'm thinking, foreshadowing here.
It would have been funnier if he just went, my glasses, like a Scooby-Doo type thing.
Yes, that would have been awesome. And then you see Dakion's hand on Eric's shoulder and scares the bejesus out of Dakion.
Dude, wouldn't you be scared if a skeleton dude just like taps you on the shoulder and you turn around?
Yep. So they attack and Hank shoots his bow at him. Dakion just grabs the arrow and just disintegrates it. Then he shoots like a shield out of his hand at not Sheila, but
Diana.
At the thief acrobat. Diana. Presto acts real cool. And it's like he's going to teleport him away, and he pulls out a telephone.
Oh yeah, that was
so
dumb.
Strike one. So basically all their attacks are ineffective. Dakion's like, really? I mean, he has like a sword that can like shoot blasts out of it. He says, I only want to talk.
Yeah, really. But I'm gonna come up all scary like.
Yeah, well, he is a skeleton where he does look kind of scary. Yeah. But he tells his story. Dakion tells a story that he was once what was known as a celestial knight. He was the only one left, and he was turned into this current state by a powerful wizard, but he doesn't mention Venger.
We don't need to know that yet.
Right. But he must recover the Circle of Power, and that's the Circle of Power is the celestial knight's most powerful weapon. So he wants to recover this, and this where it differs from the Fiend Folio, because normally the circlet is what controls a celestial knight. In the episode, they took the circlet, the ring, as a powerful weapon of the celestial knights. So he hopes to recover he wants to recover it so he can redeem himself. Actually, the whole scene of him telling his story is quite cool.
Yeah.
It was really done well. And Hank being, our fearless leader here, but he's a worthless ranger because he can't track for Jack, says he'll agree to help Dakion. Because the way home is the same place. It's in this lost tower.
Oh, please. If you would be like, hey, can you help me go, kill someone? Sure. He's like volunteers.
Sure, why not?
He volunteers for everything. Yeah, no problem.
So, no problem. You're just some sort of skeleton warrior thing. Probably evil. So they get to the but it's locked by this big, giant lock. And then Bobby's like, hold my beer. It knocks the lock off.
Hulk smash.
Right. So they knock the lock off, and there's, I guess you could say it's almost like a Doctor Who reference here.
Yes.
Where I forget, it's either Sheila or Diana says, it's bigger on the inside than outside.
Yes.
So it's a TARDIS, everybody. So
good reference, though, because you can definitely see how it was really thin and long tower, and then the inside was like this big spacious area.
Right. It's right around the 650 mark. or 655 mark, where they make the comment there about, you know, being bigger inside than the outside.
Was there an active Doctor Who series? I don't really watch it, so was there an active Doctor Who series during this
1984?
Time?
1984, yes, there was.
Okay, okay, just making
it
sure.
It was the... Tom Baker was, what, the fifth Doctor?
No, sorry.
So it would have been the sixth one, I believe.
All right, cool.
It would have been the Doctor who wore, like, the cricket outfit, and he had the piece of celery as, like a thing on his lapel. Peter Davidson, the Peter Davidson Doctor.
Gotcha, okay.
Wow, I still remember that. I'm sad.
Yes, very sad.
But my geek cred is way up, isn't it? So, that's nothing to brag about. Anyway, so Deccan says that he cannot go in to the tower because of the curse. So he says he'll meet them at the ruins to the east of the tower once they get the circlet. Okay, so they go in. Sheila, you know, gets caught in a pit trap on the way in. But when they're walking through, there's like, there's this, you're assuming they're going to get caught up by like some gargoyles, because Sheila's cloak gets like stuck on a gargoyle. So you're thinking, yes, because he grabs it. And you're just waiting for the gargoyles to come out. But so she gets caught in a pit trap. So she's like, worst thief ever.
Yeah, really.
And she goes into this like this featureless world or dimension, and you know, Bobby's freaking out, he's crying, he wets his pants, and so Sheila like wakes up, she's in this weird featureless world / dimension, and she's like all freaking out. It's like, I don't want to be alone. She hates being alone. So that's what she's most fears.
So sad too.
Yeah. So we go back to our fearful or fearless adventures, how you want to look at it. Bobby's yelling for Sheila. Uni's like around him, like what? What's going on? I'll be with you, buddy. And as they're moving along, like this, when they try to go back through the archway they came in from, Hank gets separated from the rest of the party. This archway kind of like this wall forms. So he's split off from everybody. And he goes up these stairs. But these stairs start to disintegrate behind him as he's going up these stairs. Presto tries to help again, and all this like purplish pinkish smoke comes out, and Eric and Presto get teleported to a swamp.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay, so is his magic hat affected by this tower? I guess so.
Yeah, possibly.
Blunder. It's very Funhouse like, you know, this episode. So I'm like, maybe Ghost Tower Inverness is somewhat of a reference here. I don't know, because Ghost Tower Inverness is very Funhouse-like. So, Eric, you know, Hank's going up these stairs. They're starting to disintegrate right behind him, and it's like empty space. Eric and Presto are together. And this this weird sheet thing comes after Eric, and then it covers him, and when it covers him, he turns into like a big nose. He has a big nose and big ears, like a donkey.
A weird looking donkey, yeah.
He does like this. Like he has a stuffed up nose. Presto is going to try to use his hat, but it looks like, I think it's a wraith. I want to say they're wraiths. One of these wraiths start popping up, and one of them steals his glasses. So.
That's his fear.
That's his fear. I guess Eric's fear of being ugly, I guess. I'm assuming.
Yeah, I think that's kind of his thing, the whole rich kid looking ugly, you know. I don't unpopular, right. Ugly, everybody hates me, even though people do hate you because you're rich and a brat. But
And what kind of blew my mind is after the Wraith steal Presto's glasses, they start making fun of Eric and Presto.
Yeah.
They start taunting them like the French from, like the French knights from Monty Python and the Holy Grail. I'm like, that's your attack?
Well, they're not Wraiths, obviously.
It's like, you're really a special kind of Wraith, are you?
They're the bully Wraiths. How's that?
The snarky Wraiths.
Yeah. Oh, sorry.
So, that's okay. You know, they're like, they're just weird that way.
Yeah.
So Bobby and Diana, you go back to them, and they're in this hall of mirrors.
Oh, boy.
Unity freaks out again because she sees, I think it's a white. That's what it looks like to me. So another weird undead. She sees a white in the mirror, freaks out. Then Diana and Bobby look in the mirror. And after they see their reflections, Bobby turns into a baby, his reflection, and Diana turns old. And if you pause it right at about 1126, 1127, you can kind of see Diana's.
Yeah, I saw that, and as it flew by, and I went, wait, was that what I thought it was? So I rewound it a little bit. To check it out again, and I paused it, and I'm like, holy crap, they actually showed like a boob, like, I mean.
But no nipple.
Yeah, it was kind of like they made it like it wasn't, but it was.
It looked like someone was trying to draw in one, though.
Maybe,
so
yeah.
So don't get too excited. It's an old lady boob, folks. Yeah. So it's like, yeah.
So I guess Diana's fear is getting old, and Bobby's fear is never be taken seriously. He's treated like a little baby, so.
He's feared, being an old lady, and yes, Diana's afraid that her boobs are going to sag.
That's not what she's afraid of.
Well, that's what happens when you turn old.
Yeah, she's just afraid of, I guess that's a common fear that they picked for her, but yeah, I think they could have done something better, to be honest.
Well, she's an acrobat. I think her background is just like she's on the gymnastics team.
Really? When did they ever mention that?
I think that was her background when I read it on Wikipedia.
Oh.
That she's like an actual on the gymnastics team.
All right. Well, that explains her character class.
I could kind of see how that kind of folds into this whole, fear of getting old.
Yes.
So
not being useful anymore, not able to make the team, not able to perform. I get it. Okay.
Right. And then the reflections revert to what they become. Like Sheila becomes old, and Bobby like turns into a little like
Diana,
1 or 2 year old, infant.
You mean Diana, not Sheila, because she's in a.
Yeah, that's what I meant, Diana. Excuse me.
She's just a lonely girl, lonely and blue right now. So.
Yeah. And then the whites come out of the mirrors. But they don't taunt them. They just go at them menacingly.
Yeah.
So their only defense now is Uni.
Who has no fear, apparently.
Right. Apparently so. So Hank. So they go back to Hank. All the walls and everything disappears. He falls into this hall. And he looks around, and there's like one place where there's something covered over with a blanket or a cloak, and the other one he sees the circle of power. Hank goes to take the circle, though, but hears the cries of his friends as he goes to take the circle of power. He goes to the other alcove, and when he pulls away this cloth, it uncovers a crystal ball. And when he looks into the crystal ball, he sees all of his friends suffering in the places that they're at. And he gets really broken up about this. This is really tearing him apart. And he blames himself for what's going on with his friends. So his greatest fear is fear of failure.
Letting his friends down,
And he figures out, it's like, that's my fear. So the tower is attacking with everyone's worst fears. So apparently he like hits upon it to where he could talk into the crystal ball and tell them, it's the tower. It's using your fears against you. Sheila hearing that, she perks up knowing that she's not alone anymore. And then, you know, she looks all, you know, like, all happy, and she disappears and joins Hank. Then it goes from there to the rest of our now brave again adventurers. They start teleporting back over to where Hank is, I guess, in the tower.
Right.
And Diana is hot again. Yay. Hey, they drew her nice.
Oh, yeah, yeah, definitely.
Very, very nice. Okay, everybody just saying.
It's a cartoon character.
Yeah, it's a cartoon character. Well, fine. I can admire a pretty body, right?
Moving along.
You can edit that out if you like. I don't know.
Nope. Keeping it in.
Damn it. So they grab the ring. Oh, before they leave, this is where they actually, Presto does something useful.
Yeah.
When they're trying to get away from the wraiths. Eric says, why don't you pull like an aircraft carrier out of that hat or something?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Guess what he does?
Oh, aircraft
He pulls
carrier.
Out an aircraft carrier.
You know, it kind of looked like the G.I. Joe aircraft carrier.
It did. I was going to mention that. It looked like the aircraft carrier from G.I. Joe. So, too bad there wasn't like a whole crew there to help them out. But, hey, it blocked the... I guess the wraiths going after them. And so they go back. Everybody gets back with Hank. He grabs the circlet and they take off. So they're going to bring it to Deccan. So they get to these ruins, which basically look like Stonehenge, which they kind of are. I'm telling you, man, post-apocalyptic Earth. Don't believe me? I'm telling you that the evidence is mounting here.
Okay.
So they get to this Stonehenge-like area, and then DM shows up again. And DM says, Hank, don't be too hasty to give him the circlet. And, like, Deccan draws his sword on DM. I'm like, whoa, hey, dude. And DM gets kind of, he starts to look really like, he gets all like Jack Nicholson from A Few Good Men on him. It's like, you can't handle the truth. You got to tell him the truth, Deccan.
Tell him now.
This world needs adventurers.
You sound like the Macho Man now.
Yeah, well, anyway.
Oh, yeah, brother.
20-inch pythons. Oh, yeah. Anyway. So, basically, DM is giving Deccan this look of like, you need to tell him what's really going on here. So basically he says Deccan betrayed his fellow knights. He was promised a king's treasure, but Deccan has suffered for his transgressions, if you will. So DM explains this, that, you know, the only way, you know, evil now comes full circle. And the only way that can stop is if you break the circle. Oh, okay, really? And then DM disappears again.
Of course.
So it's their choice what to do with the circlet. And when they're about to make your decision, who shows up? Venger. So he fires a bolt, knocks it out of Hank's hand. He then grabs it. He gets the ring of power here. Deccan wants to be released from Venger's servitude. He even says it to Venger. It's like, I've done what you said. And Venger's like, no. Guess what?
What?
He says, you'll have 6 more skeleton warriors to keep you company. So, right here, 1749, 1750 mark.
Yeah.
Hank starts to melt.
Yeah.
You see him melting away, and you're like, how did that get past the sensors?
I don't know.
It's like you can see that is like his skin is and hair is melting away, and it's showing like a skull. You're like, whoa. How'd the sensors get that by? I guess it was only like a couple of seconds, so I don't know. I'm probably on my second or third bowl of Fruit Loops by this time.
Going, cool!
Like, this is so awesome! I can't wait to tell my friends all about this when I meet them at Star Realm. This is going to be great. I'm going to say, did you watch the episode? And they're going to be like, no.
So you were the guy from, you were the little kid from Family Guy that loved Meg?
Yes, I was.
You're the AV Club kid, okay.
I cannot confirm nor deny that statement.
Okay. Continue along.
So anyway, that kind of blew my mind. And so Deccan gets all belligerent, and he shoots his, like, a blast of magic at Venger. So there's this big epic fight that's going to break out between Deccan and Venger. So Deccan basically reached down, found a pair. It's like, okay, he's going to stand up the Venger. So I believe, if I remember correctly, Eric has the circlet.
Yes.
And he's like, oh, we got to break the circle. Durr. So presto, and this is actually a pretty good battle going on between Deccan and Venger. It's actually pretty cool, in my opinion.
Yeah, it was, definitely.
Yeah. So presto goes to grab the circlet and throws it up in the air. And Hank shoots it with the bow and destroys the circle. And this is where things get really interesting. So he grabs it, tosses it in the air, shoots it with the bow, and then you see like Deccan all of a sudden start to change and transform, if you will. There's this big wind that comes up, and Vander's getting he's all pissed off. It's like, what happened to the circle? He gets blown away by the winds. It's like the Wicked Witch of the West, apparently. And then Deccan transforms into his regular self. He's finally got some skin on his bones, and he has this like seashell horn he blows, and then this I'm calling it a rock shows up, you know, that big giant eagle thing.
Dwayne Rock Johnson?
No, a rock, that giant eagle from the Monster Manual.
Oh, okay. I thought you meant Dwayne Johnson showed up.
No.
Okay, sorry.
So a rock shows up, and it has a harness and a saddle for him, and he goes up on this rock, up on the giant eagle, and he thanks them for freeing him. And if he finds a way home, he will return. He will come and find them. And Eric's like, we're never going to see him again.
Yeah. See ya, suckers. Let you know.
See ya, suckers.
That's pretty much what he does.
So they're like going off into the sunset. Everybody's kind of bickering with each other. And Eric's like, see, I knew we couldn't trust them. Blah, blah, blah. We're never going to see him. And they're just... And then it's the end. They go off into the sunset, I think, or sunrise. I can't tell. And that's the episode.
Yeah.
Now, few things I got out of this episode as a wrap-up. One, the use of the Skeleton Warrior was, I think, one of the coolest things they did coming out of the Fiend Folio, because it actually was a really good creature. Now, they did take some liberties with the circlet, the ring, as in the Fiend Folio. It actually controls the the skeleton worm once you have it in your possession.
Right.
But the skeleton worm can also can track you down. In this case, the Celestial Knights, he was the one who betrayed Venger, and he becomes a skeleton worm for betraying them. So, but as far as the other stuff, using the whites and the wraiths, it was pretty good too. I liked how it started with Venger. I thought that was different. This is where they're kind of breaking from the whole, like, in media res, like starting with our group of adventurers in the middle of something bad, or generally something bad. So, and I thought it was a pretty good story, this whole thing about redemption, you know?
Yeah.
He was promised a king's, you know, ransom, and he paid for it with his life, and a life of servitude with Venger, the source of evil, if you quote DM. But you also see DM as, you know, being kind of dickish here, too.
Shock.
Shows up on a rope bridge. Then he leaves, and then a lightning bolt hits it. Oh, okay. Really? He's like, just keeping you on your toes, kids. Jerk. Those are my thoughts on this episode. Just the whole story of redemption, I think, is a good one. And a damn good battle between Venger and Deccion.
Very good episode. I could not think of a way how to make this into an adventure because it's too personalized due to the fear factor going on.
Right. I agree. You have to be really general with this.
You could do the whole fear factor by just generalization fears if you know your buddies in the group or something.
Or you can, if not fears, but their weakness. You know,
yeah, you work with that.
You can just general weaknesses of those of your party members, if not fear itself.
Yeah,
but yeah, you would have to have like a real, as a dungeon master, you would have to have a real intimate knowledge or background of the player characters. This is something that you would probably want to do, like if you're going to do something like this, you know, fight your biggest fears sorts of thing. This would be something that would be like probably near like at the climax of a campaign. That's how I would do it.
Yeah, probably.
You know, mm-hmm. You know, this is like the penultimate, like, you know, the point of the campaign where they have to face their greatest fears or their greatest weaknesses and try to overcome them.
Yeah.
So but other than that, I can't think of any other way unless, as far as the skeleton warrior angle, I don't know. I mean, because you go by the description they're neutral with evil tendencies. If you go by what's in the Fiend Folio, so they're not exactly good. Oh, want to point out their magic resistance 90%. So.
Probably why he batted off everything that they gave him. So
yeah, right. So they actually kind of factored that in to the episode, his magic resistance on top of his regular saving throws, I assume.
Yeah.
So a very cool monster, though. If you want to have something, I think, that could be, you know, maybe the big bad guy in your campaign, a skeleton warrior would not be or it could be like the minion of the big bad guy in your campaign.
Sub-boss. Definitely a sub-boss.
Right. Right. You know, just like Avengers, the big bad guy, and Deccion was kind of like the sub-boss.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you could see something like that for sure. So.
Alrighty. Keep giving us feedback, letting us know, writing us in, rfistaff@gmail.com. Head over to the website and leave comments there. Go to our Facebook /RFI podcast, RFI podcast on Twitter. And
Before we say goodnight.
Goodnight. Oh, sorry.
The aircraft carrier, useful or not?
Okay, so he blocked them?
It blocked the lights from attacking them.
Considering race, yes. It blocked them, yes. And it's there okay. because Buzz Dixon was a staff writer at that point, so he was kind of involved with G.I. Joe. And
we get a nod to G.I. Joe there.
Yeah, I'll say it's useful because it did block them.
Okay, he had one useful thing, two not useful at all things. Got it.
Because, yeah, he did pull out something to stop them, like an aircraft carrier or something, and an aircraft carrier came out. So
I'm like, okay.
Yeah, it's useful.
It's useful. Okay, cool.
All right, cool. Good night, everybody. Keep it original. Keep it old school.
All right, night, everybody.
Roll for initiative.